You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the Art World Demystified.
Today on our show, we're talking with Jacob Fabricius. He's a curator, and thank you so much for being with us today, Jacob.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
Let's begin by talking about the projects that you're working on, maybe what's happening right at the moment. I know you're working on books and shows, but what is the current project that you're involved in that you'd like to talk about?
Right now I'm working on a project called Old News. It's a project that I've initiated in 2003, 2004, so it's like the 10th anniversary project, you could say. It's at an institution that's really interesting in outside of Paris, in Chatou, called CNAI. And basically, over the years, I've produced maybe 50 newspapers where artists, they clip articles, images from the news, and then it's reproduced and printed as a newspaper again the year later. So different artists, they have different durations of time. The longest time an artist has cut from newspapers were 2 years, and the shortest was 1 day.
So the artists are kind of curating the news.
You could say that, yeah. So it becomes like this kind of funny, idiosyncratic collection of news clippings. Some artists have themes. Some artists clip what they think is really interesting for that period that they're like working with. And there's also artists that add to the news or sort of like interrupts the news and stuff like that.
That's very interesting.
Any newspaper, any language, any news source kind of goes.
That's very interesting because now that's so much of what's happening, with news. It's all being sorted for us, edited, curated for us in a sense. And, you know, there are different ways of looking at the news. Of course, we all look at different sections. It says so much about who we are and how we perceive the world. That's a fascinating project. And that continues on to this day.
Yeah, and I've done an edition, at least one edition every year for the last 10 years. So actually, I've done more or less two a year because there's about 20 now. And I've also done two sound recordings where there's a band called Sunfoot. They did a recording, a tribute to a person that was on death row, and they found that worthy of a record. And Carl Holmquist, a Swedish artist, he did a sort of like a sample, kind of like almost, he made the news into a poem, and that was recorded and published as a record. So it's different kind of recordings and sort of like a gatherings of news clippings and interpreted in different ways.
And how is that produced? Who's funding that production?
It's been various different both private foundation, public foundations, institutions, and so on, depending on where they're shown and produced. It's been shown in LACE in Los Angeles. It's been shown at Midway Contemporary in Minneapolis. Part of it was also shown at the New Museum in New York. And every time it's presented to the public, the newspapers are for free. So you can actually go there and get your own sort of like newspaper or sort of like edition with you home. And some of the newspapers are like 16 pages. Some of them are like 100 pages. It depends upon like the duration and the time frame that the artists have cut articles in.
And the sound recordings, how would people have access to those?
Usually I just have a record player in the exhibition space. I've collected artists, because it's an ongoing thing throughout the 20th century where artists, they use articles from the news in different kind of ways. From early on, like in Picasso and Braque, they used it in as glued onto collages and stuff like that. And you see it throughout many isms and many kind of like art movements, situationism, pop art, and so on, how news have been interpreted and used in artworks in many different ways. So I kind of collected a huge archive of that material. Of course, I would really want an Onkavara date painting in my small, humble collection. He does these. Do you know the date paintings?
Yes, sure.
So inside the box where he basically has each date painting, there's newspaper cuttings from the day of the date painting.
Right.
And he's done that since, I think, 66 or something like that. But anyway, so I present all the newspapers together, the old news newspapers there for free, and then the archival materials, that's presented as archival material. And at the New Museum, they were actually, they had this show about the media and news, and they presented Carl Holmquist's sound recording in the elevator. So when you were going up and down in the museum, you would hear his voice, which is like very sort of chanting and like deep, going through the news sources that he found interesting.
Now, you said sometimes you had a record player. Are these often made on vinyl as opposed to CDs?
Yeah. Yep.
And so, I'm curious for myself. Is there a way to buy that vinyl? Can anybody buy any of those records that have been made in the past?
Yeah, the records you can buy. They sell them at Printed Matter in New York, and I sell them on a website and stuff like that. So you can actually buy those, and they're like done in, I think, editions of 100 or like 300 or something like that. On top of those couple of records that was produced for Old News, I have also a collection of musicians or artists that have dealt with the news in different ways. One of my favorites is Tom Lehrer, who did a beautiful cover in the early 60s for a record that was called That Was the Year That Was. And it's basically sort of like newspaper cuttings placed on the cover of his record. So I also have sort of like other artists who have used the news in the archival section. So you can also take the old news record off and put on sort of like a fantastic Tom Lehrer record.
Huh. I love that. It's a wonderful project. I'm glad it's ongoing. It seems that it could have endless permutations and continue to remain so relevant and interesting, right?
Yeah, and this for this show in Chateau in Paris, there's I think there's five editions coming out. The one with the Liz Magic Laser, one with Valet Beshti, one with Dash Manley, Pierre Reunicke, Jakob Colling, and Jennifer Mills. I just met a fantastic artist in Chicago recently, Jennifer Mills, and she worked with comedy. I was doing a studio visit with her, and I thought she had done a news page kind of, I think, every week for the last 10 years. And I invited her kind of on the spot, and I said, why don't you like join your interest in art and your interest in stand-up comedy and do April Fool's Day? So why don't you do a newspaper that's 16 pages on that exact day? And so she did. So we're printing that like next week or something.
Fantastic. And let's talk about another project. What else is happening now? I know you're working on a book. Or are there any other exhibitions that you'd like to talk about right now, or a book?
Right now, I have this small company. It's basically just me. I call it a company, but it's just me. But it's called Pork Salad Press. And I've published books and CDs and records the last 15 years or so. And I just published a book called Stolen Spoons by David Horvich, a New York-based artist. Maybe you have heard about him. He just, or his wife, just gave birth in an Uber car. But anyway, so I just published a book called Stolen Spoons with him. And then I'm working on a series of books with interviews. I've always wanted to do a series of books that had the same sort of format and design, but they always tend to like go in 100 different directions. So basically now I'm ready to do the series, and it will be a series of interviews with contemporary young artists. The first one is that's coming up is a guy called Trevor Shimizu. So that I'm really excited about. But another project that I'm working on is kind of like, it's not up my alley, but I find it really interesting. I was approached by a company that's basically based in Denmark, originated in Denmark, and now they're kind of worldwide. They open up in New York in May, I think, very soon. But they don't really normally deal with art, but they asked me to kind of curate a section for them with basically, or they wanted to produce several multiples, have a kind of like a more, you could say, democratic approach to art, where you could buy a multiple or an edition for $2 or $15, and then it's like things done by these selected artists. So I haven't really worked within this kind of like commercial field before, but I find it quite interesting.
And by commercial field, you mean making things that are, because printed matter does a little bit of that, things that are somewhat low priced and affordable. Is that what you mean by commercial?
Yeah, just working directly with a company and producing, let's say, shower curtains in 10,000 copies. That will go to New York. They will go to Japan. They will go to Denmark and end up in a flea market somewhere after 5 years or something. I've never like mass produced anything before. I've always been really interested in multiples and editions. But not in this scale.
Well, that's very interesting. That's true. Printed matter doesn't do anything like that, of course. Though some editions may be low priced, they're never produced on a mass scale that I know.
Yeah, and also their kind of principle is kind of like having it really accessible. So you actually go and you get it as like a work by an artist for. Not a lot of money. Of course, it's mass-produced, but still, there's been some thoughts behind the product, the images and stuff like that, and that I find quite challenging. So that's quite a new thing for me.
That's interesting, because that's a different model, really, of commercialism. I mean, you have one. I mean, and just to talk about your model a little bit, you're an independent curator, and you have, you know, your own company, which is yourself. But this is also how you survive, correct? You're not teaching or doing other work?
No, I just finished sort of like institutional jobs. I was director at the Malmö Kunsthall in Sweden for a bit more than 5 years, and I just finished a job as director of Kunsthall Charlottenborg in Copenhagen. And so now I've kind of like taking a little break from the institutional life, and that will be by doing all kinds of my old freelance life. Before I started in institutions, I was like freelancing for maybe 10, 12 years or something. So I know kind of like the whole system of freelancing, but I just have to get used to it again. You could say.
And how do you like that? That sounds like a challenge. That's quite a transition from being in the institution, and I know of your work there, but to being a freelancer, that's a whole different way of living, really, isn't it?
Yeah, it's different, but it's actually, you know, I thought it was actually a bigger challenge when I entered the institution, because I'd been freelancing for such a long time that I wasn't trained as a curator within the institution. I kind of like, it was DIY from the very beginning. I don't even have a master's degree, I have a bachelor's degree. So everything I've learned about curating, I've learned from doing stuff. I felt it was a huge challenge to actually enter the institution and becoming a director for the first time and saying like, oh, there's a staff. They can help me. They can build this. I don't have to go and find someone to build this. So that was amazing. Now I'm kind of like back in my old jeans, and I know how to handle that. I just had like great 8 years of institutional jazz, and so for me it's like there's nothing weird about it. It's just like trying to think about like how I did it and how I will do it and how I will, you know, work as a freelance curator. But to me, it's really inspiring and may actually take me back to some of the independent projects and the roots of how I started out as a curator.
And let's talk about a few of those. What were some of the projects that you started out with as a curator, the independent projects?
Like you mean the projects in public spaces and stuff?
Yeah,
or
the projects
within?
In public spaces that as you said, you know, before you worked at institutions, that now you're thinking of revisiting a little bit or in some form or another. And it also give us a sense of what some of how you were thinking before you entered into some of these institutions as a freelance curator in the early days.
Well, basically, I've always thought a lot about sort of the concrete space that you're given or have taken as a curator. So if it's a fire station, then you have to think about what's going on in the fire station. Or if it's a prison, then you have to kind of like, then you have other parameters of dealing with inmates and guards and security systems. So that's how I started out. The first sort of like public project I did was called "What is a guy from Leicester, a Swedish girl, a family father, and a gay couple doing on a deserted island between Denmark and Sweden?" And that was in 97. And basically, these artists were spent each a week on the island doing performative works, sculptures, drawings. And I basically wanted to pose the question so people would get curious and actually go and visit the artist. So the boundaries between the production, meeting the artist, the myths around how artists make work were kind of challenged and were met by the public directly. So that was my first, you could say, attempt of being in public space. The same year, I did an exhibition called Art Calls, which were 14 works that were transferred onto answering machines, like sound works. I placed ads I got some sponsorships from some local newspapers and some magazines, but I also placed ads in Art Forum and other sort of like international magazines. And then people could basically visit the exhibition by calling up these free numbers. Of course, it's a take on sort of like exhibitions that were produced in the late 60s and so on. But that was two very kind of different.
I love approaches. That project. Let's talk for a moment about that. So people would call in and what would they hear, and would they have choices, and could they leave a message as well?
No, they were all, some left messages, but that wasn't really the show. It was more meant to be like you could call up each track or each artist and listen to the piece. Then there was one artist who didn't make a sound piece. That was Mauricio Catalan. He made a kind of like a reversed sound piece, so you would actually hear your own voice. I don't know if you remember, but it makes me sound really old, but in the old days when you would do an international call, there would be this echo. Have you experienced that?
Yes, I remember that. Yeah.
So he wanted to like make an echo that would so you would listen to your own voice. And basically, you would call up. He asked me to invent a machine where that would delay your voice for 2 seconds. So if you were kind of frustrated that you couldn't hear anything, you may have said hello or coughed. Then you would hear that cough with two seconds delay or 3 seconds delay or something like that. So that was the only sort of interactive piece, you could say.
And then that was in his early days as well, right?
Yeah, that was 1997. There was also a beautiful, beautiful piece by Douglas Gordon, and a great piece by Julia Scher, kind of like a control piece about, how you have these answering machine services where you're guided through a system of different boxes that leads you on to the next available agent, blah, blah, blah. So she played on this whole kind of like answering machine services that are, in all banks and insurance companies and real estate agents today, or governments. There was nice pieces. Peter Fend sent me kind of like 1 hour. There was like limitations of like how long you could put on an answering machine. So he sent me like 1 hour of a conference, political climate conference, and he just said, "Oh, just select 4 minutes." So I was like, I had to kind of like edit that down to 4 or 5 minute piece, and he approved of it. Absolutely.
Well, that's a fascinating topic, and a bunch of amazing artists you were working with there as well. So that is something, as well as others, that you may revisit in the future. That these are projects that you may reinterpret.
I think I would prefer to find new ways of basically meeting or distributing artist voices and artist pieces in different public spaces. I haven't planned to revisit them really, but I think it would be interesting to have new challenges and stuff. Like there's one piece that I revisit, that's my plan, at least as long as I can stand. There's this piece called Sandwiched, which was a piece I actually did in Los Angeles in 2003 for the first time, and then I thought I would do it every 10 years. And I've done it so far. I've done it once, or repeated it once with new artists. But it's basically where the artists, they produce sandwich boards, and I stand with them for 3 hours a day and mediate the message of the artist, or they instruct me to say certain things, and I tell that to people that may come and ask me about what the text or images mean.
So that happens on the street. You're interacting as kind of an actor with the artist, for the artist.
Yeah. So it was a time in Los Angeles. I'd done a project called Rent a Bench on commercial benches, where I rented the backs of benches, and I basically thought about, like, after that project, some people had like done graffitis on the benches or asked questions on the benches. And I thought about like how public art doesn't have a mailbox, really. I haven't seen any where you could pose a question or ask, why is this in my public space, or what does this mean, or just like simple things about, like, you have this big sculpture or big text or whatever in public space, and you can't pose that question. After the Rent a Bench exhibition, I didn't have so much money left, and then I thought I could do an exhibition, but then I had to kind of like I can't give the artist a fee. It has to be really low budget. And then I, in exchange, they were doing a sign, so they were like working for an exhibition that I curated. I would stand with the sign, and then I would deliver the sign back afterwards. So basically, 3 hours or 6 hours, depending upon the sign, I would stand with the sign and then I would hand it back. So that was like a very low budget way of doing things. And that was actually, that was repeated in New York at Folsom Mall Street in Brooklyn. And that's where I did it last year in March, 10 years after.
Jacob, thanks so much for talking with us today. I'm really looking forward to your future projects. There's links to them, you know, in here, and I appreciate the work you've done, and thanks again for talking with us.
Okay, thank you very much for listening or for talking to me.
You're listening to Yale Radio WIBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the Art World Demystified.